Welcome to the 80th episode of the Chronicles of Time. I hope everyone had a good holidays and are well adjusted in their new year so far. The year of 2026 brings with it the 250th anniversary of the nation. You will notice that a lot of my episodes this year will be surrounding the formation of America and the Revolutionary War. I'll do my best to go in chronological order, with the exception of a few biographies. The historian figures 250 years ago are so important to learn in today's world. We still live our day-to-day by the written code set in place to make us independent. It is critical to understand what got us there back in the day. A revolution doesn't start overnight. It was built from a century of tension between New England and its motherland. The once loyal people of New England felt disregarded and neglected by the actions done to them. Eventually, key figures like Samuel Adams and groups like the Sons of Liberty began to gain a following. Unrest was in the air, which led way to a revolution. You will notice terrifying, uncanny parallels between today's political climate and the one of the 1700s. Perhaps the anniversary of our nation will give people a chance to think deeper about where they want the state of the country headed to and how to get there together. In 50 years, when we celebrate America's 300th anniversary, how will we look? One could ask, will this great experience of what we call the American experiment last? I suppose it all depends on how bad we want it to and how hard we are willing to work for it. With that being said, it's a good time to start the episode. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and this is the Chronicles of Time. Let's dive in to the Boston Massacre. Today's journey doesn't go back 250 years. Instead, we must go back six more to 1770. The city we will be set in is Boston, Massachusetts. Tension in the city was at an all-time high. For 2 years, British troops had been occupying the town with a threatening presence, making locals resent them. The primary reason for the troops being in Boston was to enforce the unpopular Townshend Acts, which taxed imported goods like paint, tea, paper, and lead. We must keep in mind that just a few years earlier, Parliament had put the Stamp Act into effect. This act meant that colonists would have to pay taxes on any paper they used. Any newspaper, playing cards, diplomas, or legal documents must have a special seal from Britain. Although this act was repealed the year after it was put into effect, the betrayal wasn't lost on New Englanders. The hostility wasn't always there, however. Years prior, many believed England to be home, even if they hadn't even been there. Their allegiance to the crown was strong, and they believed themselves to be Englishmen. Perhaps that's why they felt so duped by the various acts of Parliament. Through this discontent came unification. The once self-serving colonies were beginning to align for a common goal, one of independence. The events that unfolded on the night of March 5, 1770, seemed to be inevitable in a sense. The friction between the troops and the people of Boston was palpable. An argument broke out between an apprentice and a British officer outside of the customs house that would quickly intensify. Bells started ringing, which usually indicated a fire, attracting people to the scene. An unruly crowd began to gather against non-British troops. Captain Thomas Preston ordered the soldiers to draw their bayonets, intimidating the townspeople. Snowballs and rocks began being hurled at the troops, along with insults and threats. What happened next is up for debate. What we know for certain is the troops fired their weapons upon the crowd, killing 5 men and injuring others. Among the colonists killed were James Caldwell, Samuel Maverick, Crispus Attucks, Samuel Gray, and Patrick Carr. Many, like myself, consider this to be the first bloodshed of the American Revolution. Immediately following the attack, Captain Preston, and the 8 soldiers were arrested and jailed. The 5 dead men instantly became martyrs and symbols. Their funeral, led by Patriot Samuel Adams, was reportedly the largest on the American continent up to that time, with approximately 67% of Bostonians attending. All of the victims were laid to rest in the same burial plot, which can still be visited in Boston. Soon, an engraving of the night was produced by Paul Revere, a member of the Sons of Liberty. This engraving depicts the troops firing at helpless civilians and is titled The Bloody Massacre in King Street. The picture was propaganda at its finest, for Revere wasn't even there on March 5th. But it did the job he intended, because the outcry of anger at the troops was colossal. To many, these soldiers had came into their town, threatened them, and killed innocents. Justice needed to be served. Initially, the soldiers couldn't find a lawyer to take on the case. I mean, would you want to be the person to defend seemingly traitors? Ironically, it would be a patriot himself who took on the task. John Adams, Samuel Adams' cousin, was the 34-year-old lawyer who agreed to do the unthinkable. Adams agreed to be the British troops' lawyer not because he felt sympathetic towards them, but because he wanted to set a precedent of a just and fair legal system. Alongside John Adams, defending the troops, would be Josiah Quincy, who was also a patriot. Ironically, the lawyer for the colonists was Josiah's brother, Samuel Quincy, who was a loyalist to the crown. People were shocked and in dismay that Adams and Josiah Quincy would agree to do such a thing, with Josiah's father writing him, "I am under great affliction at hearing the bitterest reproaches uttered against you, for having become an advocate for those criminals who were charged with the murder of their fellow citizens. Good God, is it possible? I will not believe it." Nearly 100 people gave their accounts of what transpired that night. Some portrayed the colonists as innocent. Some noted that the colonists were provoking the troops. Some said the troops had no other choice but to defend themselves against the bitter crowd. Some swear they heard Captain Preston tell the troops to fire. Others adamantly deny that claim. The soldiers were on trial for murder. The question was, were they working in self-defense? Captain Preston wrote this of the event. "They, the townspeople, immediately surrounded the sentry posted there, and with clubs or other weapons, threatened to execute their vengeance on him. I was soon informed by a townsman their intention was to carry off the soldier from his post and probably murder him." Authorities decided to try Preston separately than the other soldiers since he was the captain on charge. The troops would object to this by sending a letter to the court that says, "We poor distressed prisoners beg that ye would be so good as to let us have our trial at the same time with our captain, for we did our captain's orders, and if we do not obey his command, should have been confined and shot for not doing it." While it's a valid objection, the courts proceeded with 2 separate trials. Captain Preston's trial lasted 6 days and would be the first trial in colonial America that would last longer than a day. The jury was made up of people who were not from Boston to try and ensure a fair trial. John Adams brilliantly had people give their eyewitness testimonies. Many stories contradicted one another, casting doubt about what really occurred that night. The jury was to decide whether they thought without a doubt that Preston gave the order to fire. Many spectators would shout things like "blood requires blood" at the jurors, attempting to get into their minds. The verdict came out on October 30th, 1770. After just a few hours of deliberation, the jury found Captain Preston not guilty. Now it was time for the soldiers' trial. The question now being, did they open fire on their own accord without orders? And if so, was it out of self-defense? In his closing statements, John Adams spoke his famous line of, "Facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence." Meaning, no matter personal feelings or beliefs, the truth is still the truth. After a 9-day trial, the jury deliberated for 2.5 hours. They acquitted 6 of the 8 men. 2 of the men, Hugh Montgomery and Matthew Kilroy, were found guilty of manslaughter because they were able to prove that they had shot that night. The 2 men were able to escape capital punishment, but were both branded with an M for murder on their right thumb. Majority of Bostonians were unhappy with the verdicts, but accepted the outcome. But the fire was lit and growing quickly. Colonists no longer trusted the motherland, and more chaos was surely soon to erupt. A revolution was on its way. The Chronicles of Time is so excited to be back for the year of 2026. I can't wait to cover the revolution and key figures from it. If there are any events or people you want me to cover this year, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. That's thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. For citations on the episode and new blog posts, check out TCOT's website at thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. That's thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. If you enjoyed this episode, leave me a rating and review wherever you listen. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and this has been the Chronicles of Time.